It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Just ahead, she spent 30 years studying freshwater mussels in the Ohio River Valley. And what she's learned alarms her.
They're like the canary in the coal mine. If mussels are dying, which in this case they are, what's in this water that's causing them to die?
That story from the Ohio Valley Resource is just ahead. This is West Virginia Morning. A plea deal means there will not be a first-degree murder trial for 65-year-old William Pulliam. The Charleston man was charged with killing James Means, who was 15. The case got national attention in 2016, partly because Pulliam is white and Means was black. Trey Kay of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Show Us and Them reports the outcome of the case was a surprise to the victim's family.
William Pulliam shot and killed James Means a few days before Thanksgiving. The story made national headlines, mostly because of what Pulliam said after he was arrested and confessed to shooting the teenage boy. He told the arresting officer, "The way I look at it, that's just another piece of trash off the street." Pulliam's murder trial was scheduled for this week after a number of delays in the case. But prosecutors and Pulliam's defense team reached an agreement rather than taking the case to trial. The move was a surprise to Faye Atkins, James Means' mother.
I just feel like it should have went to trial. I truly think it should have went to trial. I feel like nobody wanted to go through all the hard work of being here every day or going through the trials or picking a jury. So they just did something. They just did a pick and quick, real easy.
For the first time, William Pulliam talked at length in court as he agreed to plead guilty to second-degree murder. Judge Charles King asked Pulliam multiple times if he understood the agreement and the rights he was giving up. Pulliam responded clearly as he answered the judge's questions. In past hearings, Pulliam's mental competency had been called into question. Faye Atkins says Pulliam seemed clear about what was happening.
He didn't say he was sorry. He didn't have no remorse. The judge didn't let us speak on our behalf. And then what got me is, y'all say that this man was incompetent, but this man understood everything that everybody was saying in the courtroom.
Since the shooting, some have wondered if the case would become a national focus for racial justice. But multiple delays in the case have stretched out the process and seem to dampen public interest. The Means family have said repeatedly that they were getting a different kind of justice than a white family would receive in a similar situation. The sentencing guidelines for second-degree murder range from 10 to 40 years. The judge will announce a date for a sentencing hearing in a few weeks. That's when the Means family will be able to make victim impact statements to the court. James Means' mother, Faye Atkins, says she looks forward to being heard. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Trey Kay in Charleston.
The last 2 weeks, 46,000 scouts and volunteers camped on 10,000 acres of former strip mine in Fayette County. The Boy Scouts of America bought the property and over the last 6 years have been repurposing the land for outdoor adventure. Glennis Board sat down with Ken Miller, director of programming at what's called the Summit Bechtel Reserve. They talked about how the property came to be and how it might help revitalize the economy of the struggling community.
The whole plan was developed almost 10 years ago now. RFP went out to communities who were interested in having the Summit, the permanent jamboree site located in their community, narrowed it down to 83 finalists throughout the country. A committee of volunteers traveled the country visiting every site, narrowed it down to three, and the site here in Southern West Virginia won out.
Is it an independent organization within the Boy Scouts? Is it part of the Boy Scouts, this space? How does that work?
The Summit Bechtel Reserve is one of the high adventure bases owned by the Boy Scouts of America. There are other high adventure bases. We have a high adventure base in Cimarron, New Mexico called Philmont. That's 350,000 acres. We've got a sea base down in the Florida Keys. We have a canoe base up in Ely, Minnesota. So this is just the latest, the fourth one. So we have 10,000 acres on the main site, an additional 3,000 acres off-site where we can do additional programming along the New River. To date, we've invested a little over $500 million, $500 million into the site, and we'll continue to add to our infrastructure and programmatic elements.
Just give me a running list of the types of things that you see looking around this property.
So we have some of the biggest, best high adventure activities anywhere in the country. Everything is duplicated. We have large scale events up on a ridge for our high adventure program. So that would be a skateboard park. They tell me it's the size of an aircraft carrier. It's absolutely massive. BMX track, 32 miles of mountain bike trails, a massive shooting sports complex, second largest in the United States. Climbing, rock walls, rappelling, zip lines, three large zip lines. Our largest one is 3/4 mile long. You get to about 60 miles an hour going down the ridge over a lake. So just great fun.
How did the World Jamboree come? It's been since 1967, since it's been in the United States. Why did it come now?
So we put a bid, the Scouts of the U.S. actually partnered with Scouts Mexico and Scouts Canada and put a bid in several years ago to host the World Jamboree. And it's like the Olympics. It rotates around the world. The next one will be in South Korea. Never has there been a venue that had the infrastructure that the summit has. And what we heard a year ago, when we had all the head of contingents from the major countries flying to Charleston. They said, you don't understand, World Jamborees are more social than activity driven. And we said, come to the site, let us show you what we have. Because usually they pick a piece of turf, ramp it up for the jamboree, and ramp it down. So the kids here have just had a great time with the high adventure activities.
What about the rest of the year? Like, is this property used all year round?
So we do events, and we're just 6 years into operation. So every day is a new day for us and figuring our path forward. We want to be a community resource as well as a scouting resource. The next big event that comes up is the Spartan Games. It'll be here the end of August. That's 14,000 people come on site. We're doing a motocross race, but we do. And one of the things the Jamboree helped us do was have the opportunity to build two new dining halls and two bunkhouses. Prior, we didn't have the ability to feed or house off-season other than tents. So now that we can do that, we've reached out to all kinds of church groups, RV clubs, anybody we can think of. At 10,000 acres, you can have two major events on this site and never know the other was there.
Talk to me about financial feasibility for community members to access this site. Churches, schools, is it financially feasible? How much does it cost? That sort of thing.
So frankly, we'd rather have the site full than empty. We're paying the electric bill, whether you're here or not. So if you call and then the Ruby Welcome Center, the general number, you call, it'll probably be directed to me. We will work with anybody's budget. Everything's kind of an a la carte. So if you to come on site is one price. If you want to do the big zip line, obviously that's an additional charge. Personnel drives what the expenses are, but we would much rather have you here than not. And if you have an interest in coming on site for an activity or event, I would welcome the call.
Great. And then, so talk to me about, what you've got planned in the near future.
So one of the things we're pretty excited about is a partnership with WVU Science Adventure Camp. We did a pilot program last spring for 40 students from Beckley Stratton Middle School. They came out for 4 days and three nights with their teachers, camping in tents. They had an amazing time. The impact was powerful. So we went back and secured funding to do 500 sixth graders this year. And they'll come from Raleigh, Fayette, and Nicholas County for 4 days and three nights. We'll have six sessions of 80 students each week. And our goal is to expand that to all the sixth graders in the area. And ultimately, if life was absolutely great, we could offer that to all the sixth graders in the state of West Virginia to have an outdoor education experience. So that's a big one. Looking in the family camping for our scouting families, more events. We're going to be hosting the National Law Enforcement Exploring Conference. So these are young men and women who have expressed an interest in a career in law enforcement. Every law enforcement agency in the state of West Virginia has submitted a letter of support for that event. That'll be 4,000 young people interested in careers in law enforcement. That'll be next summer.
Wow. So is there anything you want to add?
I think the big one is, again, we want the summit to be a pride point in Southern West Virginia. We want people to tell their friends, their neighbors that, the summit is located in our community, and anything we can do to reach out within the community, we continue to show that and will do so. We had WVU School of Business do an economic impact study, and what they found out was in 2017, the last Jamboree year, the economic impact in the local community was $76 million, over $1 million in tax revenue, $700,000 $100,000 to the local rafting industry. So we know this event being significantly larger will just boost that. And we're only going to get better. We're going to continue to add buildings, programs, staff. We have 64 full-time staff on hand right now, 270 seasonal staff. We want to be an amazing community resource to West Virginia.
That was Ken Miller, Director of Programming and Operations at the Summit Bechtel Reserve, a high adventure, 10,000-acre property owned by the Boy Scouts of America in southern West Virginia. The biologically diverse waterways of the Ohio Valley are home to more than 100 species of freshwater mussels. Each can filter 5 to 10 gallons of water daily. But pollution, land use change, and a changing climate threaten their existence. In recent years, many mussels have landed on the endangered species list. Reporter Brittany Patterson spent some time with a veteran biologist in West Virginia who reflected on her 3-year decades protecting mussels.
Janet Clayton is standing thigh deep in a back channel of the Elk River. Clad in a wetsuit and knee pads, the silver-haired biologist with the West Virginia Division of Natural Resources reaches into a bright orange mesh bag submerged in water. Inside are half dozen mussels she plucked from the Rocky River bottom.
This is called a long solid. As it gets older, it gets really long.
Clayton holds an earthy-colored shell, about the size of a computer mouse, in the palm of her hand, and she easily identifies others.
This is a pocketbook, a wavy rayed lamp mussel, kidney shell.
Clayton, a West Virginia native, has studied mussels for about 3 decades. She began her career researching aquatic bugs, but quickly switched gears. Today, she heads West Virginia's mussel program, a program she helped build.
Mussels are very important to the environment.
In addition to filtering water, mussel excrement is a tasty meal for macroinvertebrates and benthic critters. Many mammals enjoy mussels, and they help keep our river bottoms in place. They're also sensitive.
Freshwater mussels are the most endangered group of animals in the country.
Tierra Curry is a Kentucky-based scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity, which advocates for federal protections for mussels and other threatened species. Good water quality is vital to the health of mussels, and humans have not always treated waterways with care. Chemical discharges, excess sediment, and dams all pose challenges to mussels.
So as we don't do a good enough job taking care of our rivers and streams, the freshwater mussels are on the front lines of paying the price for that.
Today, scientists know a lot more about freshwater mussels and how to protect them. And a lot of that, Curry says, has to do with Janet Clayton.
Janet Clayton is a total hero for freshwater mussels.
Working with partners across the Ohio Valley, Clayton developed mussel surveying methods that have been widely adopted. Her team set up 26 long-term monitoring sites, like this one on the Elk River. On this day, 4 divers drop their mussels at a folding table erected in the stream. Mussels tagged with little silver plastic stickers are measured. Then they're returned to the water. 5 years ago, Clayton and her team pulled hundreds of dead and dying Three Ridge mussels from this river. The cause remains a mystery.
I'm concerned. I'm majorly concerned.
Clayton is retiring next summer and says while in some ways the field has advanced, she fears some waterways will never again be healthy enough to support mussels. And new threats have emerged, like climate change and the growing natural gas industry.
Mussels live for decades in our streams, so they're like the canary in the coal mine. If mussels are dying, which in this case they are, what's in this water that's causing them to die? We need to wake up and pay attention to what's out there.
For now, Clayton is taking every opportunity to spend time in the water, her preferred office. And she says she plans to stick around to train her successor. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson in the Elk River, West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting.